But we begin with President Obama's decision for the federal government to stop deporting particular groups of undocumented immigrants and allow some of them to apply for work permits as well. We're going to get into the details of that this hour. The plan will apply to an estimated 3.7 million people, and the president insists he has the authority to proceed with this as a White House executive order.
And to those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill. I want to work with both parties to pass a more permanent legislative solution. And the day I sign that bill into law, the actions I take will no longer be necessary.
I want to work with you, the president says. And as if to appeal to the better angels of his foes in Congress, the president quoted scripture in his remarks last night.
Scripture tells us that we shall not oppress a stranger. For we know the heart of a stranger. We were strangers once, too.
To the president's biblical tone, though, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who has already made history quoting Dr. Seuss on the Senate floor, was ready yesterday afternoon with a speech invoking the Roman master of rhetoric, Cicero.
When, President Obama, do you mean to cease abusing our patience? How long is that madness of yours still to mock us? When is there to be an end to that unbridled audacity of yours, swaggering about as it does now? Do not the nightly guards placed on the border, do not the watches posted throughout the city, does not the alarm of the people and the union of all good men and women, does not the precaution taken of assembling the Senate in this most defensible place, do not the looks and countenances of this venerable body here present have any effect upon you?
My Lord. I mean, I know he's a senator, but it sounds like he's auditioning for some high school forensics contest. So much for a reasonable debate in pragmatic terms that Americans will be able to practically follow. Takeaways Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick, along with Monica Campbell, join us. Monica Campbell is Global Nation Editor for PRI's The World. Todd and Monica, welcome.
Hi, John.
Hey, John.
The 3.7 million people who are going to be affected by this, they're not getting some get out of the immigration system free card, are they, Todd?
No, what they're really getting is a delay and sort of a reprieve. What this program really does, and it's important to drill down on this a little bit, and I'm glad we did off the top, because of the level of misinformation, not only in the rhetoric, but also in a lot of the reporting. What this program does, it does two main things. People have heard of Dreamers. They've heard of DACA, deferred action,
right,
where people who came here as young people were allowed relief from the threat of deportation and allowed to stay if they came at a certain young age and it had been here long enough. This program expands that program slightly, increases the year, so adds about 275,000 people to that program. That's a relatively small slice of this. And then it takes the parents of those people and says you can also apply for status under this executive order. If you get that status because your children qualify under DACA, that will mean that for 3 years you can rely on the fact that you won't be deported, and you can also apply for a work permit for those 3 years. After those 3 years, if you don't reapply or if your status changes, you could still be deported.
So are the DACA parents eligible here or not eligible here? Monica, I don't quite get it.
I think that there's a lot of confusion. One family I talked to this week outside of San Francisco, where I'm based, they said, well, we might make it, but we might not because we might be off by 3 weeks from being eligible. So I think we're going to see the needles moved, but a lot of people still don't fit under this umbrella. I mean, you still have more than 11 million people estimated who are undocumented in the United States. The majority of the people of that group are not covered by what Obama talked about last night. So you've got a lot of people left out.
All right. We've got tons of responses from listeners on both sides of this, but some of what they're saying, I think, embodies some of the myths we want to puncture here. Before we go to them, let me just ask you one question, Todd. Is the key trigger here whether you have a child or not, or what time you decided to come to the United States based on this executive order?
It's both. It's both. The expansion here for parents of kids who qualify under DACA, it expands the number of kids to 2007, so it added about 275,000. And then the big expansion, which is probably something a little bit north of 4 million, is the parents of those people. Now, it's already the case under the law that parents of people who have green cards or who are normalized may apply. But a lot of people don't, because some of the requirements are stringent. They might be required to leave the country and come back. There's no guarantee that their application will be accepted. And if they leave, they're afraid they'll never come back. This takes away some of that uncertainty.
All right. So let's listen to what our listeners and people in the takeaway community are saying about all this. And there's a mix of forgiveness and a little bit of anger here. First, a little forgiveness.
Hi, this is Alexis from Hollywood, Florida. Even though the illegal immigrants are breaking some rules to get in this country, but believe it or not, they are, once they're here in this country, they are part of the economy. Some of them, they do jobs, odd jobs that a lot of Americans won't do.
All right, and here is a little more of the sentiments of Ted Cruz here.
Stewart in Louisville, Kentucky, as sad as it is, we cannot take in all of the immigrants that would like to come to the United States. It would bankrupt the country. There needs to be a more organized way to do this. Everybody that comes in needs to be paying their dues, and they need to have no criminal history.
Let's take the second one first, Monica. I mean, pay your dues and no criminal history, is that an ethos that's ever really been a part of the immigration system, that there's some sort of fee to get into the United States?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is these lines being drawn about who's legitimate and who's not. And I think it's really complicated. And I'm sure that Todd knows this, that if you talk to people who've lived in the United States for a number of years without papers, it's really hard to have a very clean record. And I think you're in a city, New York, where you've got a lot of young men who are living and working in New York, sending money home every month, and they may be working under forged, you know, with forged papers. You get them when you can cross the border, you can pay more. And I think that we're going to see a lot of discussion about who's legitimate and who's not.
And if it's impractical to think of immigration papers and immigration normalization, Todd, as a, you know, good behavior medal for your time here in the United States, it's also the case that you can't simply assume that everyone who crosses the border, as Alexis said, from Florida, is just a part of the economy. And poof, that makes them Americans somewhat like magic. That's not going to work either.
Well, this is part of the self-definition of a system where people live in the shadows. But it also works on the flip side, John. One of the difficulties of this program and doing it by executive orders, you say, well, can't the next president who doesn't like it simply undo it? The answer is yes. Executive orders can get undone and are undone all the time, which right away makes this an election issue, as you can imagine. But it also complicates it for people who would apply. Why? Because they want to apply to not have the threat of deportation for the next 3 years. But they look at politics, they watch the news, and they say, gosh, if I go apply and my application isn't done, can't the next administration, if they want to undo all this, they're going to have my name and address. I might be applying for deportation.
So how does the GOP respond to this besides all the high-minded rhetoric?
Well, John, that's a big debate within the GOP right now, how to react. Nobody likes it. They are all reacting strongly, calling this an imperial presidency and Emperor Obama and everything else. But how can they react practically? It's a big question. I sat down for a little bit yesterday with Lamar Smith. He's a congressman, former chairman of the Judiciary Committee from Texas, conservative Republican, and he summed up part of it. Listen.
First of all, there's no reason in my view to pass legislation and send it to the president. One, he will veto what he doesn't like, and two, he won't enforce what he doesn't like either. We've seen right now he's not even enforcing current immigration laws. Why would we trust him to enforce new immigration laws? It's just not going to happen. What we're going to have to do, and it probably will have to wait till the new year when Republicans control the Senate, is to try to defund his actions, not give him the money or deprive him of the money that he would use to implement his executive amnesty. We may file a lawsuit, try to see if we can overturn what he's done in court. And because it's so unprecedented, maybe the Supreme Court would be with us. That's a guess, and we don't know. But we will try everything, every means we possibly have at our disposal.
So, John, a lawsuit, the Supreme Court, fairly self-explanatory. Defunding the effort's a little bit complicated. Here's why. Not as simple as it sounds. A lot of Republicans want to jump on a spending bill that's in front of Congress right now because government funding expires in the middle of December to defund this whole thing. The problem is that the Citizenship and Immigration Service, where all of this policy lives, it's funded on user fees, not by taxpayers. And that means that a spending bill legally can't just undo it. You think Congress can just wave a wand? They sort of can't. Also, if they do that, it sets up a potential shutdown scenario. Republican leaders like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, they don't want that. They've said that already. Now, folks like Ted Cruz, we talked about him at the top. He says, McConnell, get tough. Block every single Obama nominee for the next 2 years until the president relents. Other voices within the Republican Party say we need to go directly at the president. Attach this to appropriations bills until the president bends. Force a government shutdown if we have to and blame the White House. We should censure. We should have resolutions of disapproval. And if those don't work, yes, John, from the fringes, maybe a couple of calls for sure for the president's impeachment. Speaker Boehner and future Majority Leader Mitch McConnell certainly don't want that talk. They're trying to tamp it down, but it is out there.
Here are a few more comments from our listeners. Marietta, Georgia says, yes, do what the president is doing. It will never pass with a totally Republican legislature. Do all you can while you can. Walnut Creek, California. I particularly liked his speech wherein he made reference to the 11 million undocumented workers that we can't pretend to ignore. And we can't ignore the fact that Republicans have acted on executive order on immigration as well. From San Antonio, Texas, no. He's too arrogant. The president is too arrogant about the things he wants. And Louisville, Kentucky, no, I think it should come from Congress. He had 2 years full Democratic control, 4 years GOP House and Democratic Senate, and now a GOP Congress. Give this new session a chance. Monica?
I think that last point was really key, that this does need to come from Congress ultimately. And a lot of immigrants themselves say that. They know this is a Band-Aid. It's a big Band-Aid, and it leaves a lot of people in limbo. And a real fix needs to be done, and that is part of a national conversation.
Monica Campbell is Global Nation Editor for PRI's The World. She's speaking with us from San Francisco. Todd Zwillick, of course, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks to you both.
You bet, John.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.